Interviews with Haunting Gurus.
Men want to be him, and women want to be with him. It's the world-renowned haunter, Ben Armstrong from Netherworld Haunted Attraction. Ben, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Well, by the time this airs, Halloween Extreme will be already over. So I just wanted to find out a little bit about your involvement. How did this whole thing, did you contact the people from Transworld, or did they contact you, said, hey, we want to do something like a new trade show convention type of thing? How did this whole thing come about?
Well, I've been around for a while. This is the 17th year of Netherworld. I was involved in other haunted houses before that, and I've always been to Transworld, and over the years I've got to know them, and I've been working with them for a number of years to help out their show. I actually sat for a couple of years on the vendors board. I was the only haunter who was on the vendors board, so I learned about, you know, all the things that go on with the vendors and how tough it is to be a vendor, and it kind of influenced me to want to help out this show more because they really need a good showing of haunters, and we want to do things that really, you know, are good for the show and good for the vendors. So I started helping Transworld out by working on their education. So I pretty much do most of all the seminar work for Transworld for a number of years. So I've been working with them on that. And then Transworld came to me and they wanted to do a haunted house tour. So I started working with them on a thing called the Legendary Haunt Tour, and it's a tour that occurs in just after the season. It's in November, and it gave us a chance to go to haunted houses that, you know, some of the bigger haunted houses are the ones that are tearing down, you know, their shows. They can't open in the middle of the year like some can for a haunt convention. So with the Legendary Haunt Tour, we can go to these massive haunted houses that can't afford to gear up, you know, middle of the year, because that's also in the middle of their build seasons. So I worked with them on the Legendary Haunt Tour, and you know, I've gotten to be pretty close friends with Jen, and she said, hey, I want to do a retail show for the vendors. And I was like, well, it sounds, you know, because they're looking for, you know, they're always looking for different markets so that they can find other ways to, you know, make a living. So I said, well, why don't we make it into a, you know, Halloween theme show, you know, in the middle of the year. So she liked that idea. So we pursued the idea, and we've been working on it for a bit. It took a while to kind of bring it to fruition, but my business partner, Billy Messina, who's my partner in Netherworld, he works with a lot of big conventions. One of the big ones he works with is Dragon Con, which is a huge convention here in Atlanta. It's probably the second biggest science fiction convention next to the big Comic Con in the country. But he needs some folks that were doing a con down in Orlando called Spooky Empire. Spooky Empire is a pretty big horror convention, but they had just started a new one called Mayhem, which is their summer version of the show. So it seemed to be a good fit with the concept that Transworld had. So we co-located with them. The show is a combination of a pretty well-attended horror convention, probably about a 5,000-person attended horror convention, and growing. And then we're co-locating with them, so you have the traditional horror convention. They've got Norman Reedus from The Walking Dead, you know, all your different horror stars. They have all the traditional horror convention activities. They have a huge zombie walk, a lot of massive parties. They have this gigantic room with nothing but tattoos going on. It must be 15 different tattoo parlors set up in there for people who want to get horror tattoos. Anyway, that's going on, and right next to it is Halloween Extreme. And Halloween Extreme is a lot of the vendors you would see at Transworld. You know, people like Ghost Ride and Distortions and Gag Studios have set up booths there to sell items to home haunters or horror fans. That's sort of the thing we've created. It's a fusion of Halloween, horror, haunted houses. So that's kind of what we got going.
Is it a little bit less expensive? Is the word I'm looking for?
Well, it's certainly, I mean, it's not Transworld. It's definitely less expensive than Transworld, and it's a different audience. The audience is going to be composed of a lot of horror fans and enthusiasts. One of the other elements that we've managed to bring into this show is we've gotten involved with Halloween Horror Nights, which is, of course, located in Orlando. And they have a program called Horror Unearthed, which is sort of their fan-based thing that they do. There's a lot of excitement when Halloween Horror Nights releases themes, and their fans are, you know, really into following them. And they have this new thing called an RFID program where you have a card that has a chip, and when you go and do certain things, it records that you did them. It's almost like a game. It's kind of hard to explain, but they're doing one of their events for their fans at Halloween Extreme. So we're expecting a lot of Halloween Horror Nights fans to be there. And it's kind of an interesting thing they're doing. They're gonna actually do an event sort of with characters relaying, you know, kind of conveying parts of their theme this year, which is, you know, much sought after information by the rabid fans. And then they're going to do a panel explaining, marketing-wise, how and why they do this. So I'm kind of intrigued, because we do a lot of similar things with our themes, to see what they're doing. And then we're also excited to have Busch Gardens coming out. They do a huge event called Howlstream, and they're going to be there with their designers talking about, you know, their event. So there's a lot of different elements that are coming together, and we're taking advantage of the location, you know, all that's going on. There's a huge zombie prom. You guys may have heard of the Zombie Army. You know, they do all kinds of crazy fun parties and events, and they've been doing a zombie prom in Chicago for many years, and this is going to be a crazy fun event. I've booked our table. We've got a table with a little, we get dead flowers, and we get a little, zombie photo, and we get to keep the skull centerpiece, you know. So it's going to be fun, you know, with wife and kids, you know, go to the zombie prom. Everyone can be dead, so it's going to be good.
Enough of Halloween Extreme, and we'll focus the rest of the interview on Netherworld. How long have you been in the game? Netherworld's been around for 17 years. How long have you been involved in the haunted attraction industry?
Oh, boy. I have to get out a calculator.
Longer than you want us to admit.
Yeah, well, you know, like everybody, I've always loved this stuff. And, you know, I was doing little spook houses when I was a kid, you know. We did the Halloween carnival in elementary school. I wouldn't count all that. Probably where I really got started, my background was in television. I actually was in the TV business for 18 years. Local television production. And, my last job, I was a studio supervisor, so I was in charge of the lighting and building sets and things of that nature. But when I was in the Tallahassee market in Tallahassee, Florida, one of the things I started doing was I was a late-night horror show host. So it's funny you have your guy Scully you talk to, because, you know, I used to have a talking skull myself on my lab table. And It's kind of nostalgic there. He had a different voice, but same basic premise. It's good to have a sidekick you can control, you know, with cable. But anyway, I was a late-night horror show host, and when I was doing that, at the time I was also producing the Muscular Dystrophy Telethon for the TV station. So I started doing haunted houses, you know, with my horror host character for charity, and I did that for 3 years in Tallahassee. And then later on, when I moved to a larger market, I came to Atlanta, you know, because in TV you're always basically just jumping markets.
Yeah,
I came here.
Radio too.
Yo, was that your background?
Yeah. Yeah, I got out of radio years ago, but because I didn't feel like jumping markets for the rest of my life. That's why I left.
And then you got back into it.
And then
you
started up this illustrious career with HauntCast. Yeah.
Well, exactly. There you go, you know.
Which I don't have to go anywhere. You know, we can stay here in the dungeon with Scully. Me and Scully, and we're all set.
There you go. I mean, you know, it's comfortable, it's dank, it's drippy.
Yeah,
wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. So
strange odors. But I was
you
in
sound
Atlanta.
Like you sound like you've been here.
Well, you know, I've got a basement. Oh boy, it's got a tiki bar in it, so it's not quite so scary. Yeah. Except where my son is. Now my son is 17. He's got his own haunted house, which is now in my garage. I don't have a garage. So not only do I have a haunted house at work, I come home and there's haunted houses and stuff everywhere. So lots of fun. But In Atlanta, I started with a chain of haunted houses. This is a long time ago. It was called Silo X. And I worked with those guys. I started here, and it was a big, professionally run haunted house. And I'd never seen anything like that. And I learned about, you know, how they did it, you know, marketing-wise, and got a sense of what was possible, you know. And it started with one, then I started working for the whole chain pretty quickly. And then after about 3 or 4 years, the guy who owned the one in Atlanta decided he wanted to, you know, get out of the business. Didn't open 1 year, and we all said, you know what, let's do our own. And that's sort of how Netherworld was formed. We got a group of folks who were like-minded. We were all pretty much in movies and television backgrounds, and kind of put our stuff together, and we did Netherworld.
Is this a full-time gig for you now?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It's been for a number of years.
So you're not selling nickel bags on the corner or like prostituting yourself at night, you know?
You know,
to make ends meet, this is a full. You know, you gotta
sometimes if you want to get HBO, you gotta do a little bit extra.
Just do what you have to do.
That's right. No, this is it. I mean, this is pretty much what we do year round, and it took a while to get there. I mean, there was a number of years when it was kind of lean, but to be frank, I mean, we've always been successful. I mean, our first year and every year, you know, we made a profit on the show. You know, it wasn't a lot, but it was enough. The very first year, it was enough to my wife stopped working, and that's, you know, we started having kids, and so she was able to stay home, which was nice, because when we took out what we made and we added what it would have cost for daycare, you know, like, it makes sense for you to stay home, you know, and then we just kept plugging along, and then after a couple of years, it actually started to do well, and then it got to be where, you know, it was better than the day job, but, you know, I was just afraid, you're like, oh, I can't quit the day job, you know, and it got bigger and bigger, it took more and more time, and it was hard to do both jobs, but I was afraid of, like, losing benefits and insurance and stuff like that, but finally, it was like, you know, I think I can do this. Why am I going to work every day? It makes no sense. I can just do the haunted house. And of course, now, you know, when you're an entrepreneur, you never go home. You're always working on it. So it's definitely a full-time gig, but I can't complain. You know, I do what I love, and, you know, it's pretty awesome. So I'm pretty happy.
It is pretty awesome. A lot of people would love to be in your situation where they could, you know, make enough or more than enough to just pay the bills and, you know, run a haunt every year. Do you have any, like, I don't know, like, philosophy towards running your haunt, or have you developed one over the years?
Well, I've got it. I've got a million philosophies. I have so many theories, and I'm always writing articles about weird ideas I have about why things work and why they don't. I mean, I've got a million of them, but when it comes down to, if the question is, you know, how and why to run your haunt, there's a few in there that I think are, you know, pretty basic. One of the biggest ones, I think, is that when you open a haunted house, a lot of people want to open a haunted house. They covet it. They desire it. But it doesn't mean that they have the means or the ability to necessarily succeed. They just simply have a desire. And I sort of feel like the reason you should open a haunted house is you need to have something special that you're going to offer. Yeah, I look at it like a restaurant. Let's pretend the haunted house is a restaurant. Now, you need a lot of restaurants because there's a lot of hungry people. But, you know, if you go, wow, I've got this idea for this crazy new restaurant with this wild new food and this interesting theme, and no one else like it is doing it in my town, and if you do it and you execute it, you have high probability of, you know, getting somewhere. If you say, I'm going to open a restaurant because I've always wanted to open a restaurant, but there's nothing special about it, then your odds of succeeding are not as high. So one of the things I think people should consider before they open a haunted house is, you know, what unique thing am I bringing? You know, what am I bringing that's special? And I think you need to have that special something to be successful. And then, you know, you also kind of need to have the total package. You have to have, you know, you have to have art. You have to have the ability to scare people. You have to have really good business sense. You have to be, you know, have enough money to survive the tough times. I mean, you have to have a lot of things aligned. There's probably not much that's more difficult than doing a successful haunted house out there. If you look around, I mean, you look at all the businesses in the town and you look across the country and how many haunted houses are truly successful. I think there's a large number of haunted houses that are making money, but they're making enough money perhaps to open again, to buy some toys and to maybe put some cash in the owner's pockets. But there are a number of haunted houses that are doing very well, but they're still rather rare. And it takes a lot of luck, you know, the right location, and just having everything lined up. And then literally it does take a lot of luck. I mean, our first year we had all these thoughts and aspirations and we'd spend this money and all this was going to happen. And, you know, we did everything and people didn't come and, you know, it rained on Halloween and it was like when the smoke cleared, we were alive, and it was like, wow. And I looked at how much money we'd spent, which was a considerable amount of money, how much we made, which was just a teeny bit more, just a teeny bit. I was like, if it had been a little bit different, we never would have opened in year two, you know? And it just, but then when you do it once and you kind of know where you land, you go, okay, I can change a few things, keep working at it. I think the second year, we made even less money because we spent more. And then that got kind of scary. And the third year, if we hadn't added a second attraction, we added a 3D attraction. If we hadn't added that and hadn't gotten the upcharge, we would have been done. But that was a considerable, that was all gravy, you know, and that put us over. And that's sort of how we started.
What is the special thing that Netherworld brings to the table? What is Netherworld offering that separates you from the others?
At the time when we began, a very, very long time ago, what everybody was doing was they were doing a haunted house with Freddy and Jason and Scream, and, you know, it was just a disconnected series of events based on popular movies. And nobody was really theming to a storyline. So when we created Netherworld, we said, first of all, everything we do, we're not using any movie characters at all. Everything is going to be original. So we from day one, we were so worried about even copyrighted music. We actually created our own soundtrack and CD, and this is a long time ago. It was very expensive to do so back then, just so the soundtracks were custom music. And we were fortunate because we had, like, one of the main guys working with us was Bill Johnson, who's a really good special effects artist, and he created most of the original characters. Most of the monsters in the haunted house were things no one had seen before. And, you know, the source of inspiration for the storylines, and I basically kind of manage most of that part of the element of it, and I've always been inspired. I of course, enjoy all the horror movies like everybody else, but I read a lot, too. I've always really like H.P. Lovecraft, you know, and this is way before anyone had ever really, you know, now Cthulhu's pretty popular, you know, or not like you walk down the street and see him, you know, at Burger King, but I mean, he's a cop, that stuff is kind of popular, but back then it wasn't. And so the essence of Netherworld was based upon, you know, things from the outside trying to get in and affecting deeper, more mythic sort of themes. So when we popped into, you know, a crowded market of haunted houses that were Freddy and Jason, and we had a deep storyline, we had original characters, we had a really strong push. And then we were also fortunate. My business partner was also a special effects guy. This is Billy Messina, and he had a degree in marketing. And I worked in local television for many, many years. So we got on morning shows. We knew how to buy radio. So we had the marketing down as well. So we had a lot of elements in place. And still, it was so close. We almost didn't make it. But we succeeded. We succeeded, and then we were able to keep growing. And so over the years, we've just continued to march down that path. I think we spend more on the haunted house every year than we did the year before. So the amount of money we pour into building sets, into buying creatures, into fabricating new things, and that's the thing, a lot of our effort goes into original work. We have At this stage, we have about an 8,000 square foot shop and warehouse, and we have people who work year-round. And so we fabricate large special effects, you know, things you walk through. We fabricate creatures that are unique, you know. And we buy a lot of stuff from vendors in the industry. Some things we use as they come. Some things we change. Over the years, almost everything we have changes. Like, we have a Slayer, we have an Impaler, but they're unrecognizable now. You know, right now our T-Rex we have is being turned into this huge white worm dragon thing. So we're constantly just trying to do different things.
Yeah, so you give it a facelift. Use it for a year, and then you go like, okay, we're going to redo this.
Yeah, and everything, you want everything to keep, you want to keep using what you have, because, you know, even if you actually can afford to buy a really expensive prop, then you have to get it there, you know? When is it coming? And you finally get it, and then you go through all these issues of it breaking, and you finally get it to the point where you got it working right, you know? And then you can change it and reshape it and you know, really make it cool. So it's a constant thing about changing. And that's another, if you ask about a philosophy. So every year, for 17 years, you know, we re-theme our show every year. At this point, we have essentially two different haunted attractions. We have our upstairs show, which is our larger one that's more gothic and traditional. And that one, you know, Netherworld is the whole event, but you could, people kind of call that Netherworld. And we have a downstairs show, which is, it's your more, what I call Rusty Pipes and Bloody Nurses, you know, which is a style these days that most people are doing. But it's your more industrial, Saw-esque, more bloody show. So, but every year we retheme both these shows. So that means they get a new name, a new logo, new icon characters, new elements. Now, we don't change every single thing in the show, but we change the general feel, the general vibe. We change major portions of it. And I think that's been important to our success, the constant reinvention. So when I'm talking to the media every year, they're like, what's the theme? Well, this year, you know, this is what's happening. And this is, you know, and it's something fresh. Yeah. I look at it like it's a sequel to a movie. A good sequel has to have the elements that were successful in the first movie, but it has to have something fresh and new in it so it doesn't become old hat. And this constant reinvention, it keeps us on our toes, and it keeps the patrons coming back.
If you have some key players on your team, Billy Messina is your partner, mm-hmm. one of the major players, I guess. You're like your second in command or your right hand man.
Billy and I are co-owners of Netherworld. We're equal partners in the show. Like, when the show's in operation, I handle the haunt itself. You know, the artistic elements, the actors. He handles the front of house. He handles the queue lines, all that sort of, all those elements, the logistics, the infrastructure issues. Someone who's been with us since the start has been Jane Rogers. She's our art director. She does painting. She handles our costuming. We have a massive, massive costume room with so many costumes. It's crazy. You probably heard of Roy Woolley. He's our head makeup artist. He's been on Face Off.
Yeah. Okay.
He works for us year round. And what he does in the off season is he works on creatures in the shop. You know, sculpting big new things or helping to work on our icons. You know, Bill Johnson is still very involved with us as well. He's very active in making films, so he doesn't work for us on a continuing basis, but he tends to make our icon characters every year, so he's very involved with us as well. We have a number of people who have a lot of mechanical skills. We have a guy, Philip Rogers, who's our operations manager, who's a full-time firefighter, so he focuses year-round on, you know, the fire safety, a lot of the construction. He handles, you know, medical issues and things like that when we're in operation. So, I mean, there's so many elements to it. You know, you got to have, it's got to be look cool, it's got to be scary, but it has to be safe. And, you know, and of course, you know, Billy and I are marketing maniacs. We're just into the marketing as well. So it's, and then, you know, we have a good solid team of folks. I mean, we work on this thing, you know, year round. I mean, we're in major production right now. we have been probably since. In the winter months, we'll, you know, have a few people will be working in the shop. It's not as big of a push. But we've probably been working pretty solidly since February. We tore out a whole lot of stuff. We're building a bunch of new scenes. We're making a bunch of new effects. So we're hitting it pretty hard.
You make a lot of your own silicone masks for the creatures.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think of the ratio between, like, bought from vendors versus made in-house as far as just, like, your props and masks in general?
It's actually more efficient to buy from vendors. They're cheaper. Because by the time you invest in sculpting and molding and producing and painting a silicone mask, it's a very expensive proposition. And, you know, but we do that when we're using, like, let's say we're creating an icon character, we might make a silicone mask, you know. So its value is not just in the haunt as a mask that an actor will wear. Its value is in the marketing, you know, the whole.
Yeah, you need it to be unique to Netherworld.
Yes.
Okay.
And what we do with them now, I mean, we just last year completed a 5,000 square foot gift shop in Key Line. So I just bought a bunch of body forms from Ghost Ride, and we've been taking a lot of our characters that we have the costumes for, and we've been building figures to put in this museum. So we have these, you know, the silicone masks look great on a figure, you know, get some good eyes in them and a good costume. So when you're in the queue line before you go into the haunt, you can see tons of our history. We have cases full of different monsters that have been made for us over the years, and also our other collections. You know, I collect weird artifacts, you know, Bigfoot footprints and, you know, mummy wrappings. And then we also have a huge collection of skulls, all kinds of different animal skulls. We have taxidermy creatures. So we have a really crazy collection of stuff in our queue line. And then of course, you go into the haunt. So, but you're asking about the ratio. And the thing, too, silicone is not the be-all, end-all. I mean, it's great, but it has its drawbacks. Every sort of mask has its place. It's so funny. For a couple of years there, we were making silicone icon characters every year, and I always play the icon characters, not necessarily at the haunt every night. I mean, there were a number of years where I acted every single night. I never did not act. You know, the show didn't open if my contacts weren't in. But it's gotten so big now, I can't do that. I have to spend more time being an owner and not playing. So, but I still act, and I always act as the icon character for the media. And a couple of years ago, I revisited one of our other characters, and we used to make masks that were foam. They were foam masks, sort of like if you see the stuff, say, that Kurtzman's doing with Creature Core, that kind of thing. And I put it on, I was like, oh my God, this is so comfortable, because the foam breathes, you know, it's got air pockets. The silicone is so hot, relatively speaking, to foam. But the problem with foam, it's not as durable, and it's also personal, because you sweat in it, you spit in it, it's like a sponge when it comes off. Silicone, you can take, you know, rinse it out in the sink, clean it out, you know, and it, yeah. Anyone can wear it. So now, when we do icons, you know, depending on the type of character, will determine what it is. Like for this year, our downstairs show is called Boogeyman, and it's sort of a dream world where the boogeyman dwells. And it's what I call the greatest hit show, because since it's a surreal concept, you know, a lot of different things can happen. But the boogeyman mask that we've just, Bill has just fabricated for us, it's a silicone mask. And the concept in that show, we're going to have the boogeyman character seen four or five times as different characters. You know, and the mask is going to be finished in different ways. One will be as a clown, one will be as a dentist. You know, there'll be different teeth, different paint schemes, different additions to the mask. So you'll keep seeing him repeatedly. But our upstairs show, our theme is called The Dead Ones. And the Dead Ones are these ancient, skeletal, nightmarish creatures. And they're called forth to punish humanity when we don't obey the old customs and celebrate Halloween and stuff like that. And they move along, and whatever they touch dies. And if they do pass by you, you know, your hair will turn gray and plants wither. But the Dead Ones we're making, that's going to be a foam thing, because it's going to be more of a matte color, because the characters are dry as dust. They're not shiny or fleshy like silicone. So And that one is actually probably going to be a multi-part mask. We're probably going to make an inner core of a skull. And it's a particular design that we want this to look like. And then we're going to do an outer skin that's more papery and thin that'll stretch as an overlay, you know, before then the costume happens. So, you know, it depends. It depends on what you want. But we have, our costume is full of masks. I mean, at one point I counted, I had over 70 or 80 silicone masks. You know, I have them from every vendor. I was buying them from SPFX when they first came out. I had the bat one from them from way back. And I've got lots of CFX. I've got a fair number of Immortal. And, of course, we have many that we have created over the years. So we have a lot of them. But, you know, there's many nights when the haunt's in operation, I go back there and I look, and they're all hanging on the racks because you can't get actors to put them on. But when you get the right actor with the right mask and they make it theirs and it becomes a character, then you know you got something that works. And that's what you strive for.
Speaking of the actors, how rigorous is the interview process? And, you know, like, how do you select the actors for the haunt?
Yeah, you know, I've been doing this a long time, and for many years I wasn't involved in hiring the actors personally, but then there came a point where I decided that I wanted to know who all these people were. And even though I have a thousand other things to do, I personally interview every single person that we hire because I feel it's important. I want to know, you know, who they are. And the way we work it, our staff generally is about 300 actors. That's what we usually hire in a year. On a given night now, we probably range between 100 to 120, 125 actors working at the haunted house. But we're open. We have a very unusual schedule. When we open for a couple of nights, and then when we open 7 days a week. We open every single night until the end. So as a result, we have to rotate a lot of people in and out because people can't work 7 days. I mean, most haunted houses are on a Thursday through Sunday schedule. And you can almost have the same people in the same spots every night, but we have to really kind of rotate it. So it's a difficult process. But the way I interview people is that's exactly what I do. I interview the people. I don't make them scream or do silly things. I want to know who they are because I've learned over the years I can have an interview and I get this person full of energy, doing crazy voices. They seem fantastic, and they wash out in one night. And I get these quiet guys who become an employee that's with you for 15 years, you know, who are rock solid. So I want to see how they actually perform in the haunted house. Generally, we have at least two-thirds returning in a given year, so I can open the haunted house without hiring a single person, you know, because I probably have a staff of over 200 that will return every year. So what I'll do is I'll hire between 80 and 100 people that are new, and we'll bring them in. The first weekend, it's all, you know, returners, and we make the new people come through the haunted house as a patron to see it. Because a lot of times when you hire people, they work the whole time, they never see the haunted house. I wanted to know what the whole thing is about and to see the different elements. And so they get a chance to see it, then we have an orientation, and then I bring them in and say about maybe 5 to 10 a night to kind of see what they have. And I give them the easier jobs, you know, the jobs that were just doing a basic scare, you know, or something straightforward, and I have other actors with them to kind of watch them and see. And, you know, with working a couple of nights, we watch them and we kind of see how they're doing, you know, and if they're doing well, we schedule them more. And if they're not doing so well, we maybe don't schedule them as much until we need them, you know. And then we also try to find their spot because we have so many different kinds of actors. And we have an entire group of actors we call the stunt actors. I don't know how many we're going to have this year, but like last year, for example, we have eight what I call stunts. People come down on bungees. They fly over on cables. They're on tracks overhead. So they're in harness gags. You know, there's a thing where a guy shoots 16 feet in the air on a pneumatic lift. There's a whole stunt core group. Then I have the puppeteers, and they run these giant puppets, things like Gorgolor are selling now, those big heads.
Yeah.
We have a lot of things like that that are custom made. for us. So, you know, we have like a giant hand that comes out and can grab you. We have a huge mouth that eats you. We have a giant head. There's a lot of different puppets. So puppeteer is a whole other type of person. And then we have, of course, what I call the greeters. The greeters are the theatrical types that will, you know, give you plot points. They're your door folks, your atmospheric actors. You get your shock scares, you get your ghillie people. There's a lot, you know, a variety. And then, of course, we put a lot of actors out on the parking lot. I mean, we sometimes have as many as 15 to 20 actors outside of the haunted house in the parking lot entertaining. And
well, you got to keep them entertained because they're out there for probably a while. That line is huge.
It's not long because we're waiting, you know, 3 minutes between groups. I mean, they're going in continuous flow. It's just there's that many people here. So, but people do at any haunted house, they spend more time outside than they do inside. I mean, I regard the parking lot as a third haunted house. The actors outside, they've got to, everyone has to have an act. And we have a lot of the sliders that slide on their knees and do the sparks. We have a lot of the giant walk-around suits. But most of them have to have a specialty, a special prop, a special act. They're really glib and good at talking to the patrons, you know, whatever it is, because they're there to pass the time, to entertain. We're getting a thing now where people come and tailgate the haunted house. They'll come out there with lawn chairs, and they'll sit out there, like, watching the actors.
In 30 packs?
it's pretty funny.
Now, outside of the haunt, you're also involved with the AMC's Walking Dead. You've had Zombieland in there to film some scenes and other type of Hollywood type of productions involved with Netherworld. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, you know, we're pretty networked into the film industry here in Atlanta. Like I said, a lot of our core staff has been active in production for many years. And something happened, it was a couple years ago, when Georgia passed some new laws creating tax incentives to move movies, you know, into Georgia. And when they did so, you know, we started seeing a lot come in. And I got involved with the guys from Zombieland, which was, you know, you probably remember that film, Woody Harrelson. It was a pretty good movie. But that was kind of fun, and they actually shot at Netherworld, and there's a scene where the guy goes into a haunted house, and that's Netherworld. But also, I kind of came on board as their zombie consultant, so I went and met with the director, and I wrote a little treatment about how the zombies might move and things like that, and I did a little zombie school on camera, and so they used that to show all the extras for Zombieland. Now, The Walking Dead, of course, is a couple years later. The thing that with me, the director of Zombieland, Ruben Fleischer, he was like, oh, come do a cameo. And I was like, oh, yeah, I want to. But I was really busy at the time, and I think I would have made time for that, but somehow I missed out on it. And I was like, oh, man. So I kind of felt regret I wasn't on that movie. You can see me in the DVD extras being goofy.
So the Walking Dead people were filming in Georgia, and they obviously you already were plugged in, and that was...
Well, what happened when the production came to town, you know, I actually went out there and met with them. And they were asking me about what I did in Zombieland, and I was frank with them. They were looking to hire a choreographer, like a dance instructor. And I said, no, you know, it's not what I do. I own a haunted house, you know, this is what I do. And I gave my notes and stuff like that. And then I went, and because I regretted not being a zombie on Zombieland, I wanted to be an extra on The Walking Dead. So I was fortunate enough to go and be cast in the pilot. So I got to be a zombie in the pilot. I got to be seen for all of 3 or 4 seconds, you know, running around with all the other millions of zombies.
What scene?
I'm in the scene where when Rick first comes down on his, he's riding on his horse through downtown Atlanta, and he comes around the corner and all the zombies are there, and we charge him, and then the horse throws him, and then he crawls under the tank, and we eat the horse, and you know.
Okay, so you were part of that group that charged him. Okay.
Yeah, that was crazy, because I think that was the first day of shooting, and that was an adventure, let me tell you. That was one of the hottest days of summer, and it was crazy hot, but I really enjoyed that. It was a lot of fun. But then when I did that, I'm like, okay, I'm here as a zombie, and then the haunt is not open, and we're not working on it, and I got guys not working because I'm goofing around being a zombie. You know, so
yeah.
I did like 2 days on the show, and that my part was done. And then, you know, they would call me sometimes and say, "Hey, you want to come back?" I'm like, I can't this time. And after you say no about 3 or 4 times, they stop calling you. So, oh well. But a lot of my actors, however, the casting company had used us on some other movies. I mean, we like came on to Rob Zombie's Halloween 2, which is not wasn't necessarily the finest of films, but we had a lot of guys who were on the party scene for that. We rented a lot of pieces. We actually rented our Pumpkin King to that movie, which is one of those giant Scare Factory pieces you can see in the party scene. But so they knew our group. So, you know, when they need monsters, you know, I get calls from the casting place, you know, and so if they need a whole bunch of zombies or monsters, they say, "Hey," and then, you know, I blast it out to my email list of monsters, and then a bunch of our guys will apply. A lot of our actors have been cast on The Walking Dead. I mean, a lot of them. They've been played all kinds of different roles, major roles, minor roles. A lot of them work on it a lot. And we also had other things. I mean, there's so much going on here in Atlanta. We have The Vampire Diaries is shooting here, which is another monster show. And then for a while there, we had Teen Wolf. I don't know if it's shooting at the moment or not. So you had 3 different monster TV series shooting in Atlanta. And also, there's a lot of horror movie shooting. I mean, that's something that I'm always looking out for, because I'll tell you what, when the horror movie wraps, I'm there to buy props. So,
are you picking them up at a wicked bargain, as we say?
Oh, you know it, man.
As we say in Massachusetts.
I don't need that. You know, like there was one that was here. It was called The Collection. I haven't seen the movie yet, but it was the second part of The Collector. But I got these 400-gallon fish tanks. I got this giant 3-headed pig. I got a bunch of weird stuff in them. And just today, I had set dressers from a TV show, the shooting. It's not a horror show, but they came by and were looking at our stuff because they're doing a horror episode. And they went, "Oh, my God, there's the 3-headed pig. I bought that for that other movie." So, you know, it's a tight community of people in production. So, you know, we keep close ties with folks who are in the industry. And, you know, like I said, if we can supply actors or we can help them out, you know, with props, or we can buy props after, it's all good. It helps everybody. We actually have a big case in our museum that's full of props from movies that people have worked on associated with the haunted house or that we've acquired. So a lot of people online can see some of these things. Like I've got Woody Harrelson's 2 chainsaws from Zombieland in that case. So people enjoy seeing that stuff.
All right, to wrap this up then, any words of wisdom, I don't know, trade secrets, anything you can bestow on haunters who are getting into the game, who've been into the game, who are at a lower level, who are trying to be or get to the level that you're at, what can you say to them?
Obviously, you know, you wouldn't be in this if you didn't have the passion for it. You got to have that. You know, time and time again, I've been to a lot of auctions, okay? And there's haunted houses that tried to make it and didn't. And for a while they were happening with regularity that was unpleasant. You know, you feel bad for these people. But people who have a lot of money and try to get in to make money almost always fail. There have only been a couple of times where there's been an exception to that, is to start small. You start small, you start careful, you start smart, and you build your brand. You learn to do it right. You need to learn. You know, you can't just jump in and know it all. I mean, your first year, your show is not going to be that great, you know, relatively speaking. So you keep working at it, you keep working at it. And if you're really lucky and you have something special and you run it really well, you know, you'll continue to grow and succeed. And you can't ever stop. There is no stopping. I mean, you have to every year combat it with renewed force. You can't just spend a lot of money and go, "Okay, it's good enough," and then just stop. "Oh, I'm going to sit back and just make money." Because, you know, you do 1 year of that and people go, "This never changed. I'm not coming back." This is a customer service business. It's all, the most important thing is the guest experience. When your guests leave you, did they have a good time? If they didn't have a good time, you know, you're doomed. And this is something in particular that I guess you say a last parting word of wisdom. Actually did a seminar on this trans world about the guest experience. I have a whole theory about that, of course. But what I've noted is, in the old days, you would say, what's the most important form of marketing? And people used to say, word of mouth. Well, or people would say radio or billboards or what have you. Well, word of mouth is very important. But back in the old days, word of mouth was, how many people do you know? You know, 6, 8, 10 people. And would you work with 8, 10 people, whatever? But now, word of mouth is everyone you're linked into on your social media. So the most important thing now in a haunted house is to have a good haunted house, because everybody who goes through that haunted house will go and tell their circle of friends how good or how bad it was. It's not about your Facebook. That doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's about their Facebook.
Exactly. You'll never even know. Their conversations they're having, their little 100, their little 1,000 people times however many people went to your haunted house, that's what matters. And so in the past, you could blow a lot of money on radio, you could bring people in, you could get fancy graphics, but if your show didn't match up, you know, you would feel an effect, but you could kind of market your way out of that, at least initially. No longer. This is a very hard time to get into the business, because where do you put your money? You know, radio's value is diminishing. People, how do you get kids are now, you know, on their, you know, it's just harder to find eyeballs. There's too many things attracting people in a lot of different directions. And you know, social media is a tricky beast, but like I said, I think it's a good time to have a show that's good, because the word will get out and people will talk to their friends about it, and that is the most important thing.
So focus on the show.
Focus on the show. Now, you gotta get the people there initially. You have to. You can make the best show in the world if you don't. You have to get them there somehow. And you have to use your assets to do that. You know, whatever you're good at, you got to have enough money to do some form of marketing. But more than ever, the quality of your show and the guest experience is what matters. When I say the guest experience, too, you know, a lot of times people let their actors go crazy. And hardcore acting. I mean, I'm all about that. I mean, I was way into all that stuff. But the point of this, it's not about the actors. It's about the customers. Like, let's say, for example, it's not that hard to make a customer pee their pants. It really isn't. You can learn how to do it quite easily. But if you make a customer pee their pants, do you think that customer's having a good time? No. They peed their pants. Now people laugh at them. Now they're never going to go back to a haunted house. Well, the actor feels successful, but you've just done something that's going to hurt your marketing, you know? So you got to think about what you're doing. You want them to go, wow, that scared me. And then they laugh and they have a great time. And they go and say, that was a great experience. I want to repeat that. I'm going to get more friends and come back. But if you make them, if you brutalize them, if you terrorize them, if you beat them down, if you go too hardcore with them, you know, there's a lot of people who hate that. So, you know, you don't want to, you want to treat your customers, you want them to be happy when they leave. That's what I like to say.
They can follow you on Twitter, they can friend you on Facebook, they can like you on Facebook, they can do all that stuff. They can go to fearworld.com to find out all the details for the upcoming 2013 season. Is there anything else they can do?
That's, you know, all the traditional ways. We market every way we can, and we try to reach out to everybody. And we taped a show last year with Making Monsters. They made us a giant centipede. Well, they've come out again, and they made us something new and crazy and weird. So you'll be seeing us on TV on this season of Making Monsters as well. Of course, we'll keep active on things like YouTube as things happen with us. But you can find us many different ways, and I'll be about here and there as well. I haven't been to Midwest in a couple of years, but I'm gonna try to make it after this one. So I want to go on another haunt tour here. So after Halloween Extreme, I'll be at Midwest, so I might see some folks there. But definitely come down and see Netherworld. I mean, we do see a lot of haunters come, and I think it's because we're open every night. You can come on a Monday, you can come on a Tuesday, you can come on a Wednesday, you know. We see a lot of people as they're coming to and from Universal, because a lot of people go down to Orlando to make that trek. So we're kind of on the way. So we do see a ton of haunters coming by, and it's always fun. you know, to if you get a chance to talk to them and see them, and you know, but come on down and check us out, and you know, we'd love to see you come and visit Netherworld.
All right, we'll catch you around the net, Ben.
My pleasure.
I'm going now. Heaven help you.
Please like and follow the podcast. Stalk us on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Links in the description. And help us by sharing Hauntcast with all your Haunt and Halloween brethren. Until next time, stay scary.